The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So 2 days ago, I was at a kind of a birthday party for my Zen teacher, who's been my kind of Zen teacher for some 43 years, named Mel Weitzman. And he turned 93. And so I calculated, he's 90. And I calculated that I met him when he was 47, and I was 22. And he struck me then as being an old man. But I want to tell you the story of that first meeting I had with him, because it was kind of pivotal for me. I was doing Zen meditation in college in Davis, California, and there was a small sitting group there, very small. I think sometimes there was three of us, the couple whose apartment it was in, and myself, and sometimes there was a few more people that came and sat. And at some point in 1976, Mel came up from Berkeley to lead a half-day sitting. And it was like kind of like scheduled like we have for these Wednesday mornings, you know. I think there was two sittings and a little walking meditation, and there was probably a little talk that he gave, like, and then we had a lunch together. And for me, I never met someone like Mel. It, something resonated, something about him spoke to me. And the way that I characterize it to myself and other people, this man, is that he was extraordinarily ordinary. There was, you know, there was something very ordinary about him. And I thought, you know, if I met this person at the supermarket checkout line, if he was in front of me or behind me, I wouldn't have thought anything of him. Just the first is there. But there was something extraordinary about how he was ordinary. It was like I'd never met anybody like this. There was no ego, seemingly, or defending himself, or proving himself, or asserting himself. And he was completely at ease with just being nothing special. That seemed pretty special to me. So that was kind of like I kind of got my attention when he showed up, and we were having this potluck. It was just lunch. I don't know what it was, and then this thing happened that was a wonderful, powerful lesson for me. The one of the hosts, the woman who was the house that we had the sitting group in, said, has anybody seen my cigarettes? And Mel said, oh yeah, it's in the nightstand in the bedroom. And I don't know if, you know, maybe that's where he changed into his robes, or I don't know what the story was. And I was so impressed that he would have noticed something like a little detail like that. Wow. I don't know if the word mindfulness wasn't popular yet, so I don't know if I knew the word mindfulness, but I was so impressed by someone who would be attentive to the little details of everyday life, like where the cigarettes were. And that really, this ordinary guy, who seemed so extraordinary, that he was mindful, he was attentive to his world that he lived in and noticed these things. And, you know, I didn't know. I mean, the world was just was in the way as you went on to take care, you know, go on with your life and what's important, right? So you had to somehow deal with this world that's in the way and or something. So I wasn't, you know, I wasn't paying attention so much. And so I was really inspired by that. That was great. And then the host went up and looked for cigarettes, but they weren't there. And I thought, wow, he just made a mistake. And And the combination of those two things really inspired me. I was inspired by this idea of being present and attentive for the life you live. So I granted him that. I didn't, like, the fact that he was wrong didn't detract from it. And he made a mistake. How wonderful. He wasn't perfect. And this combination has served me well in my life. Some of you probably noticed that, it's pretty wonderful to be present and practice. And it's okay to be wrong. It's okay to make a mistake. And that combination of these two sides, and it was kind of, in some ways, came to me again in a maybe more, I don't know if more dramatic way, but from a different angle. When I was ordained as a Zen priest, and it was clear that I didn't want to be a priest. I wanted to be a monk, and up until 2 months after I was ordained, they called everyone at Zen Center monks, the people who were ordained. 2 months after I was ordained, the abbot said, "Oh, by the way, we're calling you priests now." And I said, "What?" That was not what I had signed up for, but I got used to it. Anyway, I grew up pretty secular, and the idea of religion never really, still doesn't interest me that much, oddly enough, given what I do. And so ritual didn't really mean much to me. But we had to go through this ritual, being ordained. To my surprise, it had a big impact on me. And then in the next weeks, I noticed something very peculiar. I noticed that now that I had a shaved head and wore robes, I was kind of a public figure that represented something. And people would stop me and talk to me. Before I was just this scruffy hippie. If anything, people kind of recoiled from me. Certain people, they would have nothing to do with me. And if I'd sit on the bus waiting for this, bus stop or something in San Francisco, mostly just people ignored me. After I was ordained and had a shaved head, people would come and talk to me. And start telling me all these details of their life, and these people who clearly would have avoided me before were no longer avoiding me. And so I was a public person, kind of. And so how I behaved and how I was noticed by people. So I became much more aware of my shortcomings in this kind of setting. And I had lots of shortcomings. So I became really aware of how I couldn't live up to this or my shortcomings. But the odd thing, that was not so odd, but the odd thing was, now that I was ordained, I felt like I was a child of the Buddha. And it was more okay to have the shortcomings. And it wasn't that, I thought, this is a great combination. Of course you want to know about your shortcomings. I wanted to know them, because then you can practice with them and find a way with them and be wise about them. So that's good. But then to be okay with having them, it wasn't mean like I was just going to go barrel ahead and, impose them on people. But to kind of feel at ease, feel at home, feel comfortable, feel like, okay, this is how it is. That combination. So this combination of being attentive, living in the world, aware and awake and present, and knowing you'll make mistakes and be okay with it. To be, whether you're ordained or not, you don't have to be ordained for this, but if you'd like it, if this kind of language works for you, you're a child of the Buddha, or you're part of the Buddha family, or if you really want to get religious about this, you're not just part of the Buddha family or a child of the Buddha, you are the Buddha. And you have these shortcomings. And that's okay. Isn't that great? So there's two sides. And for me, that was very important to learn this, because it was such a strong tendency to have one or the other. Oh, me, I'm so terrible and bad. I have all these problems and, I'm just lousy and I'm pretty foolish and bumbling around. And So, you know, lean in that direction. That's the whole world, right? And then I didn't really, it was seldom that I leaned in the other direction, but, you know, like, oh, I'm just so great. But somehow to hold these two together. And that was very important for me because I had, you know, I erred on the side of, you know, I have these problems and struggles and all this. And so to have this Dharma, that the Dharma field that held me and kind of create a context and way where that's okay. There was space for it. There's allowing for it. I didn't make it a problem. But it was something to practice with and not to ignore, but to practice with and develop and grow. So, please be mindful, be attentive, and if you make mistakes, it's okay. Thank you.